If there is awareness at the show, better than be home and have no awareness.
If I watch TV and there's awareness, it's better than reading Abhidhamma book but no awareness.
At the moment, you blame the government, like when you have the problem with the environment issues and you blame it because of the government, or when you think this is not good policy, it's all because of the government. I'm not sure if this awareness or not.
You're talking about story, not about reality.
Even in the middle of blaming the government can be understanding and awareness, even at that time.
But the thing is, you have to be truthful to yourself. What is actually the state of mind at that moment? Because if you say, okay, it's natural, awareness can arise anytime, but actually, are you really truthful at that moment? I think that's the most important.
Like now, like any time.
I said to Sarah that I find the discussion of yesterday very, very useful. And also what Ajahn said, and that Sarah elaborated about details in daily life, like thinking of different levels of pariyatti, and I and my pariyatti, and that is again thinking with the idea of self. And I appreciate more elaborations.
Nopadom, you mentioned yesterday, I think, that you thought it would be helpful to talk about the subject of sila. Is that right?
I apologize to God because she didn't come in that session. I thought that she came in the session that we Ajahn talked about the sila before. That's why I mentioned about the sila. And because she asked about the kaya vinyati and vajji vinyati, it means speech and well, like a body action, something like that. It relates to sila. That's why I remind for the sila. You have understand that.
Would you explain how it relates to sila?
The point is, Ajahn explained about what it is. It means what is a sila. That you have to understand the word. That some ask every time if you listen and don't understand that what it is. But I heard the mind or high and ask about the what kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati. It means that chitta sharupa, both of them. But I try to remind that give you understand the sila like a kusala sila or agasula sila. You will understand what is going on. But she didn't. What came at that time that Ajahn explained that. I forgot. You remember them, Ajahn talk about the sila?
Yesterday?
No. That's the first day.
First day.
Yeah. No, the first day.
Yeah.
In Colombo,
In brief, people have an idea of sila, such as following the precepts or performing certain kinds of behavior. This is a conventional idea of sila, because as we know, there are different kinds of sila and different kinds of behavior, but actually sila refers to the way or manner or behavior of citta. So now there are moments of kusala and moments of akusala. So at moments of kusala citta, it is kusala sila, and that kusala citta can condition ways of behavior or ways of speech. Like now, it is citta that is conditioning the speech. So moments of kusala citta, moments of akusala citta, I'm sure also that condition speech, and the same with behavior, like when I'm gesturing to help explain the meaning, or when I reach for the microphone, it's behavior or manners conditioned by citta. So again, it can be kusala citta or akusala citta, kusala sila or akusala sila, that is conditioning that kind of behavior. And usually people think of sila as just being good and pure, but when we think about the behavior of citta, we realize it can be kusala or akusala. And avyākata refers to when it's not kusala or akusala, for example, the cheetahs of the arahat, but we don't need to discuss that. The kiriya cheetahs we mentioned briefly yesterday, that condition, speech and behavior.
So Tarajan always reminds us, see, each word should understand correctly. So sila, what sila is? Sila, now is sila. So each word lead to now. See, each moment, kusala sila, akusala sila, even the seeing moment is apakata sila. So each word lead to now, whatever appear, and after seeing, thinking, kusala sila or akusala sila.
I understand that only in the Shavana we teach it. Agusala and Agusala. Not like a vipaka citta.
So avyākata just means the citta which is not kusala or akusala. So vipaka cittas, like moments of seeing and hearing, are not kusala or akusala avyākata. Moments of kiriya citta, like the cittas of the arahat or other cittas in the mind, in the sense door, mind or process, that are not vipaka, kusala, akusala, avyākata. But I think that when we're talking about sila, it's referring to the kusala citta, the akusala, or the kiriya cittas of the arahat. I don't think we can, seeing is avyākata sila.
Yes, I'm sorry, yeah. Only kusala, sila, akusala, sila, and moments of, we don't need to talk about kriya citta, because it's the citta of the arahata. Yeah. Thank you, Kunsara.
If someone can help me to remind me about why we should consider the Buddha's word carefully.
Because when we only read them in the text, we may miss the real point, because whatever the Buddha is teaching, like Ajahn says, it's always about this moment, the reality at this moment. So when we read a sutta, we get a deeper meaning when we are careful and consider the meaning, that it is not only abstract or theory or talking in general, but that it is about this moment. And that's why we have to carefully consider each word, because then we will find out about this.
I'm not very fully understand, because the understanding arises by its own condition. So what is the main point of that? Of consider the word, the meaning of the word carefully.
That is the way that understanding develops, and there is more understanding. That is just the way that you are wondering about that now, but that is the way to that it will happen later when you consider carefully. Not at once, maybe many lifetimes, not just straight away. Because you think maybe straight away we should have a right understanding of this moment. But that's not possible. We have too much ignorance accumulated.
I think one of the things usually Ajahn said when she starts the discussions in Vietnam is that each word of the Buddha's teaching comes from his wisdom. And so that means that the word points to the reality, the nature of the reality, which is hidden by ignorance. So that is the reason why we have to consider it carefully.
I have one question about sila jan, because usually, like we just said, any kusala citta or akusala citta is, we say it is kusala sila or akusala sila. But the other day you mentioned that it is any kusala or akusala when it conditions speech and deeds. So when it doesn't condition speech and deeds, I thought it's still sila, kusala or akusala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why do we have to study the teachings, each word very carefully, in order to really understand it as it is? For example, right now, what is there? Answer, please.
What is there now?
Yeah.
Seeing.
You talk about seeing. How do you understand seeing? What do you understand seeing? How much is there, the understanding of seeing? That's why we need more explanation or talking more about it. Because you see that no matter how much we read and talk about, it's not a moment of that. It's not anything at all. It's only a reality. We talk much about breakfast, flowers, and so on. But what are they? See, no idea of a Dhamma, a reality, which is experienced, which is tasted, which is touched at all. During the morning breakfast and walk along the road, seeing flowers and things, even right now, no idea, no understanding enough of that which appears as not me, no one, not anything. It's only that which has been heard before, like it's that which is seen. No idea at all. Even we repeat many, many times, that which is seen is only a reality that can be seen. Never more than that at all, no matter in what life. Only that which is seen. From nothing, then there it arises to be seen and falls away, unnoticeable, unknowingly, without any understanding. That's why we learn to understand reality in many different ways, as much as we can understand, not as much as people in the Buddha's time who could understand any word he said so very perfectly. Because at that moment, whatever appears, right understanding is there on that object, understanding it as a reality. We don't have to repeat it again, and it becomes to be detached from, clinging to it. Because usually everyone like this flower. See? No idea of that it's seen. And from nothing to something and disappear. And this is so true that right understanding can develop to that degree that it can become having less and less attachment, which means more, a little more, a little more of understanding of it. Otherwise, there will never be detachment, because who can do that? Only right understanding, which understands better and better, to know the moment of whether there is detachment from it or not. And there are so many things in life to be detached. Everything. Because there is attachment and wrong understanding which takes it for something all the time, while it's not at all. That's why the more we heard the teachings and learn about the truth, it conditioned by its nature, by itself, by the sankhara khandhas, the jetasikas, which are now performing the function. No one, only citta and jetasika all the time. But they do not ever appear. What appears is only that which is experienced by them. That's why, how can there be detachment from clinging to it? Because clinging arises with ignorance at moment of experiencing any object. That's why it's not enough in this life or other life or 100 lives until it's there. At moment of whatever appears, instead of ignorance and attachment, right understanding, from just very little until its moment of abandoning the idea of something in it.
Can you explain about when you said abandoning something in it?
Flower here.
But like the Arahanta stain.
Not yet, not yet, not even the Kichayana or the Patipati. This is Pariyatti. If there is no understanding like this, there will be some idea about it. Having jhana first, or then one can have vipassana and so on. It's one's own thinking, not the understanding of this subtlety of realities at all. That's why Buddha taught for those who had accumulated lots of understanding in his time. Otherwise, who can understand that? If he would say, there is no one or thing in whatever appears.
So it's a momentary abandoning. At that moment, or those moments, no notion of something. When there's some awareness of a reality. It means absence of the notion. We talk about abandoning, but it's not a doing. It's just the absence because of the arising of the awareness.
So because of awareness and understanding, it can see through that there's what is seen is not the flower, but just visible objects. So it knows for sure that it's what really is seen, right?
To my understanding, if there was awareness of the visible object, this would arise, and the idea of flower would also not stop arising, but there'd be different moments. So it's not that one sort of suddenly stops seeing a flower, but there are moments of awareness. A visible object is just a visible object. Recently, I've been coming across a lot of mention of conceiving, manyana.
Manyati.
And there are a lot of suttas on this topic. My understanding is that conceiving are moments of thinking with agusala, attachment, conceit, or wrong view. The Buddha talks about abandoning or living devoid of conceiving. And also, that's what I'm going to ask you. In the suttas,
how do you understand that?
I understand that to mean absence of those moments of agusala. So if there is thinking with gusala, if there are gusala moments arising, then at that moment one is living devoid of conceiving. I think the conceiving refers to the moments of agusala thinking, that particularly that follow the sense door, or not just limited to that, but any kind of thinking that's agusala with attachment, conceit or wrong view is covered by the term conceiving. Manyana, manyati.
I think they're not manyati.
No, manyati. Manyati. And I think manyati and papancha are closely related. So I think manyati is thinking with akusala, usually with lobha of one kind or another, like thinking about all the different kinds of food and the flowers. It's like thinking on and on with attachment, usually manyati.
Always akusala?
Not always, but depending. So, but when it's referring to manyati, it's always referring to akusala, I think. I think it's thinking, conceiving, but the implication is it's with akusala.
Why not just say akusala? What is the difference?
Well, it's a particular term that's used in the text, so I think it's just referring particularly to thinking about a story with akusala. It's used quite a lot in the suttas.
I just remember a sutta in the middle length saying, and it is a sutta by the Venerable Mahakanchana, and he explained in details about papancha. And it is very similar to like akusala thinking that follows the process of the process through the five senses.
I think in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta it uses manyati, thinking about earth with in different unwholesome ways, taking it for something. And so I think, yes. Yes, Mula Pariyaya, yeah. So it uses manyati.
I remember the sutta. So it first talked about the way the Butuchana conceive about the things, and then it talked about the way the Aryans take earth as. So I would like to know the words, the name, the terms for that in the two cases.
In any case, it's referring in the first place to the thinking about earth with manyati, assuming it to be something and thinking in an unwholesome way, no understanding. Whereas for the Aryan, no doubt that it's just patui datu, just earth element at the moment of touching. So even if there is thinking about table, no misunderstanding that it's something there, no taking for atta. Khandas. So we know that visible object is khanda. It arises, it falls away instantly. There's clinging to what arises and falls away, upadana khanda, at that moment. So each conditioned reality is khanda. Sound, visible object, upakhanda, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling that we find so important that arises and falls away, fade each one. Vedana Kanda, and because of Sanya, there's thinking about all these foods and flowers and everything. So each moment of Sanya is Sanya Kanda. When there is clinging to that Sanya, it is Upadana Kanda, and each other Chetasika is Sankara Kanda and Vijnana Kanda. Each moment of experiencing, each chitta is Vijnana Kanda. And the difficulty or the common misunderstanding is because Kanda is always translated in English as aggregate or heap. And this is the meaning of, this is the, or if you look in all the dictionaries, this is the translation of Kanda. So what teachers have always said, like the Buddhist dictionaries and a passage from Nyanaponika and Nyantiloka and all these teachers, everyone has said you cannot say each rupa is khanda because it's a misuse of English language, because khanda refers to the group. And so in this sense they say khanda is not actually a reality, it's just a grouping or a concept to include all these different realities. And so we say, actually, no, khanda refers to the arising or falling away of each reality. But khanda as translated as group or heap, would you say a little bit more on that?
I wonder if there is not even one, can there be a group?
No.
And each one arises and falls away. You do not have to wait for the others to arise together and fall away together at all. Not seeing, waiting for hearing, smelling, tasting to arise and then as a group fall away.
So why is khanda translated, or why is it said that the meaning of khanda is heap or group when actually it refers to each one?
It's only just one way of understanding, only one meaning of that word. For example, if we talk about sila khanda, we don't talk about any samadhi or panya at all. But no matter it is sila, patimokha sila, or indriya sangvara sila, all are sila. So they are classified by way of group, but actually it means each one, whatever arises, falls away. If it does not fall away, it cannot be khanda. If it does not rise, it cannot fall away. So whatever falls, arises and falls away is khanda, for sure. So when we talk about rupa khanda, we don't talk about any reality which experiences at all. We just talk only of those realities which each is a khanda.
Each is a khanda, so why do the texts say, okay, one khanda is rupa khanda that actually includes all kinds of rupas? Why does it say five khandas when actually there are countless khandas, yes, countless rupas? Yes.
According to upadana only. That's why the five khandas are taught by way of upadana. Clinging so much to rupa, today's breakfast and everywhere flowers on all are rupa. And vedana, the clinging. If there's no vedana, which is so pleasant to experience such and such rupa, if it's not as important, there would never be seeking and searching for any kind of anything at all. But since whatever is there is object of attachment like khanda, rupa khanda, so what for? Why do we eat good food, breakfast, and so on? Because of vedana, clinging very much to vedana. And not only pleasant vedana is khanda, even unpleasant is khanda, because any reality conditioned arising and falling away is khanda. It's like someone who read Tipitaka and see the word N-A-M-A, nama, and then its name. So some people might read the Pali without understanding it. They are all names instead of they are all mental realities. See? So when we come across any word in any book, there must be understanding of what's there, the meaning at that proper place is what, whether it's this or whether it's that. Otherwise, we'll mistake.
And if we read, for example, like in the Dhammasangani about khanda, and it talks about, oh, the far, near, gross, subtle, and each one. Each one, but it doesn't particularly mention the arising and falling away, but because it's talking about each one, then we can say it's implied, but it doesn't particularly refer to the arising and falling away.
If it does not arise, can it be there?
Cannot.
So it, that is included.
Right.
Yeah. And see, what is pariyati? And what is not pariyati?
Only when there is understanding, because otherwise if one just reads about heaps and groups and thinks a lot about that and thinks it's not about reality and so on, then it cannot be pariyati. And at this moment, hardness experienced. So whether it's called khanda or not depends whether there's understanding.
With understanding, when one come across the word seeing, one knows it arises by conditions, it falls away. So what is the meaning of khanda?
It must be.
And all conditioned realities are different from nibbana. Vi sankhara dhamma. See? So how can there be the idea that khanda must be a group? Because each arises by conditions. and then falls away. Each one.
In the commentary, the word group is explained, but I forgot the Pali word. So maybe that is why they say about a group and there are misunderstandings about it. But the commentary, yeah, I don't know. We can't say it's wrong.
There was some part that, like, from something that was said in the Sudhimagga before, which you quoted, and Ajahn said actually clearer if one says it's kinds of realities, because different kinds of realities, so kinds of khandhas, yes.
Ajahn, I think the other day you mentioned that if one of the nama khandhas arises, then the other three must also arise.
They arise together.
Yeah, they all arise together. So is this perhaps why they're referred to as groups? And they all must also be Rupa Khanda as well, right? So would that be to do with why they're sometimes referred to as groups?
Do you mean that they arise together as one?
No.
See, each different ones arises and falls away at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah? Since they arise together. So when they fall away at the same time together.
Does this explain why they are sometimes referred to as groups?
It means that all four namakandas cannot arise separately. That's all.
But the rupa khandas don't arise at the same time.
But they are arisen at the same time.
But we should consider the characteristic of reality, whether it arises or not, as itself only one, if you think that it has to be in a group.
Perhaps when it is talked about as a group, it can be just one aspect, and then it is applied in the wrong way. In the commentary, sometimes only one aspect or another aspect.
I think it depends on understanding. Because Atthasalini, Thammasankhani cannot be wrong, but it depends on the understanding of the reader.
Because I was having a discussion just the other day with a friend on the group, because they were talking about the five groups and how they're not really realities, because it's referring to all the different rupas in a group. And when I said actually it's referring, each one is khanda, it arises and falls away. And they suggested this is a misuse of English, and then quoted a part from Nana Ponika about khandas and groups and heaps. And so, as Ajahn says, in the end it comes down to how one understands or reads the same text. And like we were saying this morning, one may be an expert in all the details of the text, but can still be misunderstood as not referring to realities now.
It's not wrong, but it's another aspect or another meaning of khanda as group too, like sila khanda. But since they understand just one meaning, so
they... Only one meaning,
yeah.
And then you apply it wrongly.
So in this sense of the other meaning of group, if we say it's not wrong, when they say actually it's not referring to a reality but to a group, that it's actually like a cat, they say it's like a category or a concept referring to many different realities. So is that correct in that sense then?
Like sila khanda and not panya khanda. No matter it's what kind of sila.
Yes.
Patimokkha samvara sila, indriya samvara sila, or whatever.
But each of these kinds of sila, Patimokkha sila or Samvara sila, like Samvara sila, is a reality. So whichever one it is a reality. Certainly. Yeah.
Not a group arise together and fall together like that.
But each one is a reality, but in order to discuss them in simple or shorthand one can say there are all kinds of sila, sila khanda. Yeah.
Like talking about Thai people, Vietnamese, English, see, one or the whole group.
So we can say then in that sense there are different aspects or different meanings of khanda, and one can talk about each one as khanda and one can talk about the group as including many different ones.
Why cling to the group? Because each arises alone. Yeah.
I may have missed some of the discussion a minute ago about sila khanda. Is that in the context of the factors of the Noble Eightfold Path?
Sila, samadhi, panya, and adding the word sila khanda, the group of this.
These are the factors of the Eightfold Path.
No, it's referring to the different kinds of sila, like she just mentioned, for example, Patimokkha sila, Indriya Samvara sila. So any kind of sila is included under sila khanda.
But when you talk about sila khanda, samadhi khanda, and panya khanda, it seemed to me that it also referring to the Eight Noble Four Path, or is it not? No. Okay.
No.
When panya develop, it is when it's not intellectual understanding, it is adi sila, adi citta, and adi panya.
And so samadhi khanda would refer to, as I understand, any kind of samadhi. Yeah. So it could be just referring to ekagata now, or it could be referring to development of samadhi, or it could be wholesome or unwholesome samadhi, any kind of samadhi.
And when it's adisila, adicitta, and adipanya, they have to arise together. While only sila, they can arise separately. For example, Patimokkha Samvara sila is not Indriya Samvara sila.
Patimokkha Samvara sila is like the sila that the bhikkhus follow, the wholesome cittas at the moment of following the Vinaya, following the rules. Whereas Indriya Samvara sila refers to moments of sati, moments of sati with understanding, right awareness of realities.
Sila with understanding.
With understanding, sati with understanding.
That's why it's not general one. So it's this adi sila, adi citta, and adi panya.
It's actually quite helpful to talk about sila khanda, samadhi khanda, panya khanda, just to understand how many different kinds of sila refer to how many kinds of samadhi. Otherwise, people just have an idea. Samadhi is some developed wholesome state or something, not understanding that samadhi is now or sila is now. And under sila khanda, would it also include akusala sila too?
We don't have to think about it because we better study in order to understand reality, not just name. Because Buddha classified them for those who can understand much more about the details. But anyway, as soon as there is the hearing of the word sila, one knows that it's not panya, see? And that it's not only one sila, five silas. So khanda, each one is khanda.
Tathagata, for example, when seeing arise, seeing itself is vijnana khanda, and see visible object. Visible object is rupa khanda. Visible object is cannot arise alone. It arises together with the four mahabhuta rupa. So that's why Tathagata said, why cling to the group, many group of rupa khanda? So it's very good to hear that. And also, when seeing arises, there are seven cetasika accompanied to coming together, arising together. And the vedana cetasika is vedana khanda, and sanya is sanya khanda, and the other five cetasika is sankhara khanda. It means each cetasika is khanda, one khanda. Thank you.
Each one arises and falls away, and any can be the object of clinging. So any can be upadana khanda.
That's why it's good to remind us each moment is no self, it's only reality.
Maybe I can think like this way, like rupa khanda and nama khanda. And when we talk about the life, we talk about the five khanda. It's mean the rupa khanda and then the four nama khanda. In either way. But normally we talk about the five khanda, we understand what is going on.
Usually when we talk about the five khandas, we understand what's going on. Sure?
Each citta, each moment of citta arises falling away. All these five khanda. Okay? Because of when we talk about the vinyana khanda, we have to know that hatiya vatu. Because of the citta arise with the hatiya vatu. Hatiya vatu is the rupa, right?
Actually, it doesn't arise with the hatiya vatu, but the hatiya vatu is the base. The citta has to have a base to arise. There has to be eye sense for seeing to arise, and there has to be another base for other cheetahs to arise. But I think when we're talking about vijnana khanda, to understand vijnana khanda, we don't need... Because seeing now is vijnana khanda, no matter what it's called. So understanding little more about seeing that appears now, it's not necessary to start thinking about hatiya vatu, otherwise I think it's a good example of how it will just lead to more confusion and doubt. Hatiya vatu means heart base, so each citta has to arise at a base, it has to have a place for arising. Seeing has to have eye sense for it to arise, it arises at eye sense. Other cittas have another base to arise at. But if we're talking about the understanding of seeing now, or thinking now, if we're talking about what kusala or akusala citta is, or thinking, no need to start talking about heart base. Otherwise, just more confusion.
When we talk about the seeing, the vijnana khanda is a seeing. But the seeing has the eye base, right? That's why we talk about the five khanda, or we can talk about the rupa khanda and nama khanda, but it's right together in the five khanda.
That's why there are five, because in some planes of existence there can be only four khandas, and some plane can there be only just one.
So in the planes where there are only four khandas, the vijnana khanda has what at the origin is no need the rupa to arise, right?
For Brahma realm, no rupas and no need for citta to have a base at all. The mind or cheetahs, no base at all.
For the person who is attaining the absorption, arupa absorption, at that moment that citta still arises based on the hatiya vatu, right?
In what plane?
In the five khandas planes.
Kamavachara plane must have. So in Kamavachara plane, every citta.
That's why we can talk about five khandas plane, one khanda plane, and four khandas plane.
Like a human being, animal, and what else? Not
the other five planes.
Rupa Brahmans. Rupa Brahmans.
Except the other five planes and the...
Wherever sense objects are experienced.
Maybe another topic, because I heard before about daily life. I heard someone talk about the Abhidhamma and the daily life. But when we talk about the Gamma plane, we talk about a Gamma Vachara Citta. Gamma Vachara Citta is the daily life. Right? Right, Dina?
because it normally the daily life in the gamma plane.
Like now, like seeing is gamma vacharachitta. They're seeing now and hearing now and clinging or aversion. All these chittas we learn about now is daily life.
Ajahn, we're having a discussion the other day about anumodana dana, which followed on from a discussion with the bhikkhus. Maybe you'd say a bit more about that.
Right. Ajahn, I was just interested to clarify. Say a person having performed some gusala then shares the merit with his or her parents and other beings. That person sharing the merit, if it's gusala, we call it anumodana dana. Is that right?
Pattidana.
What does patti mean in this context?
Sharing.
Oh, sharing. And then the parent in the other realm, if they're able to hear and rejoice with kusala jitta, what kind of kusala is that called?
Is that called?
Is it dana, sila or bhavana, for example, in the classification of kusala?
So let's talk about
the punya kriya vatu.
Punya kriya vatu.
Okay.
The 10 punya kriya vatu. What are they?
What are they? The 10? Oh.
3, 3, 3, and 1?
Three dana.
What are they?
Three.
What are they?
Dana itself.
Ordinary dana. And then anumodana dana. And patti dana.
Right. Anumodana dana is the second one, so
the third one. Patidana, like your example of sharing.
Right.
And then anumodana dana, when one appreciates the other's giving.
When you give the opportunity of other people to appreciate the kusala you are doing, so it's not necessary that they are dead, but like they are here.
Well, we can come on to that in a minute, but we're just at the moment talking about the parents. The realm,
yes,
who are able to rejoice in the kusala of Patidana. The son or daughter.
Patidana, yes. It's the same as anumodana, like
that's
different.
As I understand it, when one performs dana or one recites and shares with others, so others have an opportunity to rejoice, that is patidana. And if the others rejoice in that dana, that's anumodana dana. That's why we say anumodana, or why people in Sri Lanka say anumodana. And we don't even have to think about people who've passed away. Like now, one may do something helpful or useful and one may share it. And at that moment, it is patidana, if it is with kusala jitas. And when the others are glad to hear about that dana, that opportunity, it's anumodana dana.
So why is that rejoicing by the person in the other realm considered a form of dana?
Like the what?
Sorry?
I couldn't get it. Yet.
Okay. Because you say the anumodana dana is...
Rejoice.
Rejoice. Why is rejoicing dana?
Why not?
In what sense?
Why not? Kusala citta arises and it rejoices in others' kusala or dana.
But the other kusala may be not dana, it may be sila or...
Yeah, whatever.
Right.
Dhamma discussion, for example.
Right. Or understanding. Mm-hmm. Why is the rejoicing considered to be dana?
To be anumodana or dana. Right? Because it's not just giving thing to you directly, but it's a kind of gift for you to rejoice. If I see Kunapadon give something to Kunsara,
yes,
I rejoice.
Yes.
Or if he help her, I rejoice.
Yes.
What's wrong?
It's a kind of dana by definition.
Because it's dana. It's the point. It's not your own deeds.
Yes.
When the others have done something,
right,
it can be just like the dana, the gift for opportunity for you to rejoice.
I can understand that. It's a gift to the person to rejoice, but then that rejoicing is...
Even discussing dhamma now, the other can lesson or heard about it and rejoice in our deeds.
Yes, understood.
Yes, anumodana.
Yes.
So no problem.
No.
So it's anumodana, it's no problem.
Right.
But the problem is why it's under the
heading of dana.
Of dana.
Yeah.
It's like something which is given for someone to rejoice,
right.
Even if it's not things.
Right.
It can be anything. The opportunity, if this hasn't happened, has to be given.
Mm.
Moment or opportunity to rejoice.
Right.
Rejoice cannot arise.
Right. But I can understand why the person who's sharing the merit is giving the opportunity to the other person.
Right.
So I can see that's a form of dana.
Yeah.
But I hadn't appreciated that the person who receives that gift, as it were, and rejoices, is also said to be performing a kind of dana.
No.
No.
Rejoicing is moment of kusala.
Yes.
That can be rejoiced in anybody's, the other's good deeds, no matter it's dana or
sila
or bhavana. Because it's like giving opportunity for that person.
Yeah, that person is being given the opportunity.
A person just walking around here.
Yes.
At this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he heard what we are talking about.
Yes.
And he rejoiced.
Yes.
It's like the giving opportunity, happenings, kusala, for that person to be conditioned for his rejoice.
Yes.
So it's under the heading of dana.
I think John's point is concerns the person who rejoices, right?
Right.
So the kusala, we all agree that it's kusala, but we know that kusala can be classified as dana or sila or bhavana. So I think the question that John is wondering is why is it classified under dana?
We can say that anything which is not done by oneself, any good deeds which is done by the other, can condition rejoice for that person. So it's like giving opportunity, events for that person.
It seems that part of the problem is we think of giving, when we think of giving, we also think of someone receiving. And in the case of if we do the sharing of merit to our parents or others in other realms, if they're able to receive, then there's a giver and a receiver. When the being in the other realm rejoices in that, I think we're finding ourselves looking for someone to receive that. But perhaps what you're saying is giving, and it doesn't matter if there is a receiver.
Let's think about rejoice itself. What is it?
Kusala citta.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the question here is whether the aloba is more predominant than the adosa at that moment.
Rejoice in others' good deeds.
Yes. To
remember in others' good deeds, not your own.
Mm-hmm.
If it's your own, not rejoice.
Yes.
But when you see someone doing good deeds, what manners, and then kusala citta arises from that event, from that which is seen, heard, so forth. So it's not one's own deeds to participate in such deeds, like, but there can be moment of being rejoiced in such and such events. It is like being given opportunity or condition for such kusala citta to arise.
To come at it from a slightly different angle, I think I remember reading that when we talk about gammapatta, there are different ways that gammapatta can be committed. The first way is one does the act oneself. The second way is that one procures another person or encourages another person to do it. And the third way is that one rejoices in the gammapatta done by another person. And that is reckoned as being possible gammapatta on the part of the person rejoicing.
So, when the other enlighten, you participate, rejoice.
say there's an act of killing, for example, by someone, and another person really rejoices in that act of killing, then, as I understand it, that could amount to the patta of killing.
Because it is related slightly to such happenings.
Yes. So, in the case of the sharing of merit, mm-hmm. the person rejoicing, are they relating in some way to the kind of kusala that is being shared? So if the
even it's not been shared.
Yes.
There can be a moment of rejoicing.
Yes, so we talked about earlier the person walking past and mm-hmm. seeing a wholesome act done mm-hmm. by, so someone saves someone else from discomfort or suffering, and the person, mm-hmm. the observer, rejoices in the gusala deed. Mm-hmm. That gusala by the person rejoicing is kind of related to the kind of gusala that he is rejoicing in.
Concerning, relating.
Yes.
But it's like it happened by yourself.
Yes.
It's not being given.
No, it's not being given in that situation. Mm-hmm. In the case of the Anumodana Dana, the person rejoicing is rejoicing in the giving, the sharing of the merit, rather than the gusala deed that is done, which may be other than dana. And that's why it's reckoned as a kind of dana.
I see your point.
Mm.
I think that makes sense.
Mm.
And also because not everyone can rejoice in that good deeds. So unless that person sees the value of the good deeds and has the same wholesome citta.
Because Ajahn related the story from the texts of the person who said to the bhikkhu, there are beings, Deva, could you mention that one again?
A deva asked a monk or lay people, I'm not sure, why didn't that person extend merit to devas too? But he could, because I think
the
that devas he also
were there.
Like the deva want the patidana to be done.
The devas could observe the gusala, but they couldn't share in the merit because it hadn't been extended to them. Is that right?
I think that it depends on the story, on the text, and the moment. For example, even the merit is not extended, there can be moment of rejoice.
Oh, there can be.
Yeah, and we do not extend merit to that person who walks.
No, but we talk about the other realm. Because they rely on their merit being extended rather than observing.
That deva can.
Can.
But still, he asked that person, why didn't he extend it to? Maybe the other deva cannot be rejoiced by himself like him, but the other deva
relies on having the act of merit shared, and so therefore they are rejoicing in the dana of the sharing.
I heard a similar story concerning the betas also, unless we extend the merit to them, they cannot rejoice in it. Right?
Because you see, the plane of beta is quite terrible. No time to think of rejoicing in others' good deeds, except when the relative mention his name, like such and piti, to be remembered from those who are related before in previous life. See, there make many conditions for kusala to arise.
Like for us who sometimes we need a prompt. We may see someone doing something kusala but no conditions to think about, and then they may talk about it a little more and then conditions to rejoice in it and think about it more.
Someone rejoice the other's good deeds by oneself. Is it exactly like the same moment when someone comes to you and then say, I have done good deeds and I share merit to you, especially.
The citta and the person who needs the act of extending merits would be called the prompted citta, like kusala citta prompted, right?
We don't really know about it, so it's like we just mention it and then someone may have an opportunity to rejoice. And I think the in terms of the rejoicing. Like, for example, when Nina came up and said, oh, she found something that we said yesterday so helpful, and she was rejoicing in the sharing of the Dharma. And actually her rejoicing, when I hear about it, is like a gift. So it's like a gift. But of course, sometimes we don't know when someone's rejoicing. But in that sense, it's, I can understand why it's a kind of giving, because it's like, and it's kind of encouragement also. Something similar. It's like a, it's actually like a kind of gift, so I can see why it's a kind of giving. And even if one has no idea and it's not mentioned, but still, I can understand why it's a kind of giving.
And we don't have to speak out, see? Or it depends, like now, see?
When seeing another person doing good deeds, if macharya or isa arises, that cannot be rejoicing, right?
With Tipitaka, we know that that is that beta, special, particular one, is specified by the Buddha that he or that beta would be rejoiced at what time and when. See? So it seems like it needs, but thinking about any kind of kusala, it does mean that all people can rejoice, especially those beta. Very terrible moment.
Going back to the earlier question I was asking about conceiving manyana, Kundang looked at the Thai sutta, and there's no Thai word for conceiving. What it does is it substitutes tanha, mana, diti, those three things, for the one Pali term.
And what term is there?
In the Thai,
three words.
Not one word.
English one.
Chitta with tanha, mana, diti. But in Pali, it's one word.
Manyana, always the thinking in a kusala way, so that's why it's so close to papancha. It's like thinking about the flowers or the food with loba or mana or diti.
You think that sometimes we are limited by the words. Our understanding is limited. But if it's unlimited, it can understand better and wider too. Because what is the great hindrance always tanha and mana and ditti? Because even there is no tanha. Because if you don't mention whether it's on that section or other section, like on vipassana development or on, even right now, it can be hindered by tanha or mana or titi, see? But if we just be very specific, it has to be this only here. It's not a right understanding of reality as different degrees of different grades at different moments at all. It's not vipassana developing now. One is hindered by tanha of flowers and things, so forth, or mana, or ditti, for those who do not have right understanding, see? But when it's a development of understanding, even after vipassana yana, there is still tanha, mana, and ditti. But it's not as like without understanding as one has developed before. So we think of different words which can mean different degrees or different occasional time, but actually they are realities. They cannot change their characteristic as attachment, tanha, it hinders. Because at moment of attachment, there must be ignorance and mana as well, and ditti. That's why it like what should be or what has to be eradicated before other thing, it is ditti. Because even there is no ditti, there is tanha. Even there's no ditti and tanha, there's mana.
The Vietnamese translation of that word is even more misleading. So it's good that you bring us. Otherwise, I couldn't really think in Vietnamese. So in Thai translation with the three words like that. In Vietnamese, it's just like knowing by sanya or something like that.
In English, conceiving with loba mana and ditti, because even just conceiving, then people have read about it, and then they have the idea, because they know it's referring to akusala chittas, then they have the idea there shouldn't be any thinking about concepts, because conceiving usually means thinking about concept. So they read, oh, conceiving is unwholesome, so then they think better stop thinking. So it needs to be specified, conceiving with loba mana or ditti.
Conceiving perhaps to indicate that it's akusala.
Arahata doesn't have conceiving.
No, he still thinks in concepts. He still forms concepts, but not with any kusala or agusala.
That's why I think there should be clearer understanding about moments, because people has doubt about whether arahata do not know who's who. See? How can that be? That's because of not understanding clearly about moment to moment of realities. For example, right now, if we would talk about the process of seeing bhavangas all the time, until if it's through the eye base, then the visible object or that which we're talking about, which is now seen, impinged on the eye base. At that moment, bhavanga is there. So it vibrates. Or before that, in order to talk about the lifespan of rupa, it started from a moment before that, which is called atita bhavanga, before the bhavanga vibrates. To be 17 moments. Yeah, so it starts from that one. In Pali, it is atita bhavanga, like any previous bhavanga. And it conditioned the vibration, the impingement on the ibis after the bhavanga, after it has arisen, which is the atita bhavanga. It impinges on the bhavanga, the ibis, so bhavanga vibrates. That is bhavanga chalana, and then falls away, conditioned the next moment, because it can stop the arising of and falling away of bhavanga as soon as it is impinged on the ibis. So the next one is the end, what you call it in English, it is bhavankupacheta. That last moment of the current of bhavanga. It means that after this moment, bhavanga cannot arise anymore.
Arrest bhavanga.
Arresting bhavanga.
Why it arrests?
Stop.
Okay. It is arrested or what? Yeah.
Represents the last bhavanga.
So it is called?
Arresting bhavanga.
Arresting bhavanga. See,
what is the literal meaning of bhavangupa cheda, upa cheda?
It's cut off.
Cut off, so
yeah.
This is what arrest means. It means arrest in the sense of cut off, yeah, stop, yeah. What I'd like to ask about is, it's clear that because rupa lasts for 17 moments of citta, so in order to count the moments of idor process, then there must be these three bhavangas beforehand, and the visible object must have already impinged on the eye sense at these moments when the bhavanga cittas arise. So actually, each Bhavanga Chitta is exactly the same, whether we're referring to these three or any other, but these three happen to be the last three before there is the sense door averting consciousness, and these last three happen to be those chittas arising when the object has impinged on the eye sense. But because the nature of each Bhavanga Chitta is always exactly the same, always has its own object, when it is said that the Jalana Bhavanga vibrates, the second to last Jalana vibrates, what exactly does it mean? Because of course it doesn't actually vibrate, it's just Bhavanga Chitta. It just so actually this is it's very misleading. People think of something hovering, but actually the Bhavanga Chitta is exactly the same. So it actually just means the second last Bhavanga. That's all it means. So the term's a little bit confusing. So for me, I just prefer to say it's just the last three Bhavangas. That's all.
Almost the end of Bhavanga.
Almost the end of Bhavanga. That's all. Yeah, but actually nothing is impinging on it, nothing is vibrating, it just means it's the second to last Bhavanga, almost ready for sense door averting consciousness to arise because the visible object has already impinged on eye sense.
And also there is the comparison for this action, that it's like a fly.
Yeah, the sugar.
But not the jar, but the drum, one side of the drum.
The drum skin.
And as soon as it touches, it affects the other side, which is Bhavanga too.
But even this simile, like of the the bee and the flower, or the vibrating on the drum skin, I always used to misunderstand it, because when you talk about the touching on one side and then the movement on the other, it makes it sound like the Bhavanga actually moves or vibrates, but it doesn't mean that at all. It just
otherwise it would be like other Bhavangas.
It's just a metaphor. It just means that actually it's the second to last Bhavanga before there is the averting to the sense door object, that's all.
Otherwise, nothing to do. It keeps on being Bhavanga.
There are so many rupas arise and pass away all the time, and they impinge on the one of the five senses, but only, when they're seeing now, what I mean is, now they're seeing this and not this, that. But the rupa, which is visible object there, also arises and falls away. So what makes this, after the three bhavanga, that the eye consciousness arises to experience that particular visible object, is determined by the karma which has been performed before, we don't know when. Is that correct?
Karma and other conditions like Pakdupa Nisyapachya and the physical object itself, which must have impinged on the ice.
Aramana Pachaya, it could be any object, but why this object and not that object? So that what determines that, I guess it comes from the karma, right?
Condition is karma, which conditions that particular moment of seeing to experience that particular object.
I would like to give an example, like someone falls in sleep. When talking about a fastened sleep, in deep sleep, even trying to move the body or their body, he doesn't wake up. It didn't fastened sleep. It means a Bhavanga Chitta is not a Adhita Bhavanga or Bhavanga Chalana. Even the speak too loud or just move the body or something like that. That one may be another thinking about the Kamma Pachaya that you're talking about.
Because we talk about sleep, so I just think about the sleepwalkers. You know, the people who get up during the night and then walk everywhere and then go back and they don't remember anything about it. But for sure at those moments there is sanya, always. I just guess that it's like a kind of total ignorance. But what conditions that they cannot remember anything during that time?
Do you remember just a moment ago?
Some things I remember and some things I don't.
I don't think so. What is seen?
I remember I saw you, they were putting this coat
before that.
Before that, you talk about getting warm at night time. So I just wanted to make sure that this is like the more ignorance at those moments, right? When you don't really remember anything.
When one sleeps, it does mean that there is always dream or no dream. But even it's there, they cannot. We cannot remember all.
I just think about the description of ignorance in two aspects. One is it that it doesn't know the Noble Truth, the Four Noble Truth, and the other one is like it covers. It covers up, I don't remember, the object, yes. So I just think about when there seems to be no recollection of anything, that is because of ignorance, it's so much, right?
No, I'm just joking. Because some people sleep and then wake up and reading something and then back to sleep again, and then wake up and then read something and then back to sleep again.
You know that person?
You know?
Is there someone you know who's here?
Bali is papancha. Kreung tham hai kreung neun cha. Papancha, papancha, Bali. Papancha.
Two different terms, one is manana and one is papancha, but actually the meaning very closely related.
Annoying. Annoying.
What is annoying?
Annoying.
Not like
Nina
wants to know what is annoying.
You mean dosa? Awesome. Well, for me, yes.
Good story.
You're talking about the situation, and you said that the situation is whole ignorance, so it's not right.
I must generalize. It doesn't matter thinking of the story, because the thinking is real, and you said something. Awareness can arise anytime.
Yeah, I just repeat that, yes.
Sorry, but for oneself, it's no story. When you read about politics, it's no story.
And who's not interested in stories? I don't think so.
I think her point is that because when she's telling the story, he said that it's a story. But why he doesn't think when about politics is also a story? But we know that understanding can arise anytime, even when he reads about politics or when she tells about the stories.
It's because it's a Dharma discussion, so it's like a reminder. So when one's thinking about the story of what I had for breakfast or what I may have for lunch or what happened last night. So when one says it's a story, it's just a reminder at that moment that it is just manana, it is just thinking with lobha or thinking with dosa. So it's just a reminder, actually, even at that moment, it's just dharma. about politics, you can also remind him it's just a story.
Differently, she really means that someone is not very nice.
As we discussed yesterday, no matter what kind of cheetah it is, whether it's cheetah with dosa or cheetah with loba or even very strong akusala, they can be understanding even that moment. So common.
But, so often we are carried away by the story, so absorbed that we don't, we are not sensitive to reminders, or we don't think of it. We are just forgetful very, very, very often. So we need to be reminded by good friends in the Dhamma.
We take the story for being some kind of reality or truth and forget that it does come down to cheetah at this moment, what kind of cheetah thinks that way or likes that way. So it always comes back to now.
So continuing on ignorance, at the moments of liking one's food, for example, at that moment the object is not covered up because we know very well that, oh, that is this taste and that taste and how it...
It's covered already.
But I mean, here it's like the other aspect of ignorance, which is it doesn't know about the vulnerable truth. Right? Because at that moment it's no understanding of the realities at that moment.
So, akusala citta or akusala citta?
Akusala citta.
So, ignorance is there.
Yes, right. Yes. So I mean, because I kept thinking about many people think that when one knows what's going on, that there is sati.
Like what?
Eating, knowing that one is eating. Yes. So because they think that sati is knowing what's going on, but if we study in details, we know that even when one knows what is going on, remember very well what has happened, but if the understanding, it is still the moment of akusala and not sati.
Where does misunderstanding, aware, the English aware, they think, I know that I'm walking, or I know that I'm doing this or that, and that's already sati, they think. But then we have to explain that it is quite different, just an idea, a wrong idea.
I'd like to follow along a little bit the topic that Metta and I were and you were discussing at the foundation a week or so ago about Acharya and Kalyanamitta. We had the discussion about how actually you had mentioned to me before that only the Buddha is really the teacher, and for the rest of us, whether Ajahn or anyone, it's really a Kalyanamitta, the good friend. And she had mentioned on a tape I'd heard that even Sariputta is not called teacher but Kalyanamitta. But as Metta pointed out, there are many mentions of Acharya, teacher, in the texts, in the commentaries and in the Vinaya. So I wonder if we can just discuss this a little more.
Even Buddha himself is Kalyanamitta. It does mean that teacher is not Kalyanamitta, or Kalyanamitta is not teacher, but it depends on what we are talking about. For the Vinaya, there must be Upacharya and also Acharya, the one who give ordination and the one who teach. Acharya. And so for Vinaya, there must be Acharya. But for the teachings of the Buddha, it is said in Tripitaka that any word of truth is word of Buddha. So no matter who teach, who talk, who speak, the right words are the words of the Buddha.
Like in the Atisalani, it says that whatever any of the great disciples teach, actually it is Buddha Vachana and not their words, and in this sense only one teacher, because it comes from the Buddha. And when we discussed it, the point was it's a good reminder, because otherwise these people may say, oh, this is Ajahn's teaching or something, but no, if it's the truth, it is the Buddha's teachings, and the rest of us just share as good friends.
I heard Ajahn also say that Kalyani.
You say Ajahn. Because you see, in Thailand, Ajahn is like teacher.
Yeah.
In school,
Ajahn. We are so used to
anywhere.
It.
Anywhere, common word.
We are so used to it to say Ajahn.
Yeah,
but I heard you say that to be a Kalyani Mita, there has to be a Vipassana Jnana.
No, not necessary.
Oh, I heard you say that.
You heard what, sorry, Nina?
That to be a Kalyani Mitta, one has to have a Vipassana Jnana stage. I heard you say it, but is that true? Or?
Let me hear it. Yeah, because it depends.
And also, for me, I call Thanachan, because I respect Thanachan, because she's the one who give. As it helped me to know, to understand the reality. Yeah, so we call Than Ajahn.
Word in Thai language, Thai culture.
For us, for so many decades,
we just call her Khun Su Chin because it's our habit. And when she came to England and my mother said, how should I address you? She said, just call me Su Chin. Yeah, so just different culture, I think. But the point is that it is all the Buddha's word.
And then you can see how conceit hinders. It's one of the papancha, the hindrance. If you don't want to listen to the word of truth, well, like Ajahn said this morning, each word of truth is the word of the Buddha. And it doesn't matter who says so, but I could not really get that, the meaning.
And one forgets. So anyone can be Kalyana Mita.
And then you can receive much more Dhamma than before.
Yes.
You see?
That's right. Otherwise, yes. One switches off and one doesn't.
Right. And one misses such a lot of good Dhamma reminders.
Yes.
I experienced that. It's a confession. I have to repeat my confession.
Yes.
Oh. No, Ajahn.
I'll give you absolution.
No, Ajahn said this morning that each word of truth is the word of the Buddha. But I used to be very partial. I used to like to listen to Ajahn only and follow Ajahn all the time. Lots of attachment to Ajahn's word. But in the course of time, I found out that it is true that also other friends, when they speak about Dhamma, they can help me a lot. And if you only think of one person like, well, Ajahn, Sujin, you miss such a lot, you miss so many Dhamma reminders, and then you can experience that conceit is a papancha, a hindrance, because the three papanchas hinder the development of panya, is always said in the commentary. In Thai, kruang nung cha, they slow down the development. So it's good to know more about one's moments of conceit, that conceit really hinders.
You mentioned earlier that for the bhikkhu, they need one with the preceptor who gives the precept, and the other one, the acharya, Is there any reason that there must be two, or they can be both performing the same two different functions?
แต่คราวนี้ว่าในฐานะที่เป็นอุปัชฌาย์นี่ก็คือให้บวชอุรบุตรแต่คราวนี้พอบวชแล้วนี
่ Someone can explain better than me, but what I did catch is that it can be the same monk, or it could be different. And then I think he's explaining the duties of the upachaya, and that is in vinaya and behavior as a monk generally.
ถ้าไม่อยู่กับพระอุปัชฌายะเพราะผู้อุปัชฌายะนั้นเนี่ยมีหน้าที่สำหรับให้บวชเป็นภิกษุเท่านั้นจากนั้นนี่ก็คือ
So the main role of the upachaya is at the ordination and then thereafter he may live with the upachaya but if he wants to live elsewhere there has to be another bhikkhu who is the acharya who teaches him aboutthe vinaya and duties of a monk etc
การนี้ผู้ที่เป็นอาจารย์ได้นั้นนี่ก็จะต้องมีพรรษาตั้งแต่5ขึ้นไป
Acharya has to have at least 5 rainy seasons of standing as a monk and has to be knowledgeable in the vinaya and the different kinds of offenses under the vinaya the different kinds of offenses under the vinaya the different kinds of rulesBecause different rules have different consequences for breach. So you can call them offences. For breach of a rule, there are different grades of offence. So he has to know all those sort of things.
แล้วคราวนี้ว่าถ้าอยู่กับอาจารย์หรือพระอุปัชฌาย์นั้นนี่จะต้องอยู่อย่างน้อย5ปี
The monk, newly ordained monk, has to stay with the upachaya or theAcharya for at least 5 years before he can go off on his own, but he can only do that if the Acharya Upajaya feels that he has sufficient knowledge and understanding and right understanding and knowledge of Vinaya and is able to look after himself. Because if the Upajaya or Acharya doesn't give his approval, then the monk has to continue to live with the Upajaya or Acharya.
คุณสมบัติของอุปัชฌายะก็คือจะต้องมีพรรษา12พรรษาขึ้นไปแล้วก็จะต้องเป็น
Well I missed the first bit someone has to have at least 12 pansa did you
Yes
อุปัชฌายะ okay and then he has to be knowledgeable in all sorts of things obviously and training and vinaya and performance of the patimokkha on course of the daysThat's very clear. Anything further?
Today, I think that there are many monks who, after a very short time of being ordained, the ordination, they start traveling, going to another place. So I don't know if whether they got the permission from the preceptor or the acharya, but if they don't get the permission,is that considered an offense?
สมัยนี้นะครับพระที่บวชใหม่มีหลายองค์ที่ไม่ได้อยู่กับอุจาริยาเป็น5ปีไม่ทราบองค์นี้จะขออนุญาตก่อนหรือว่าไป
ขออนุญาตไม่ได้เพราะว่ายังไงจะต้องอยู่กับอุปัชฌาย์อาจารย์อย่างน้อย5ปีแล้ว
They can't get permission within the first 5 yearsSo they are in breach of the Vinaya. เป็นอย่างนั้นสมัยนี้แล้วว่า
ทุกสมัยคือพระวินัยไม่ได้ยกเว้นกับสมัย
Well, he says it's always been the case that there are breaches of the different rules of Vinaya. So he's not saying it's more now than before.
And also a lot depends on the upachara, because if the preceptor doesn't have...really strong good understanding of the Vinaya or of the Dharma himself then it's really quite hopeless situation so if the upachara is not proper one he doesn't meet
take his responsibilities seriously
yes or maybe he has made some offenses that are serious offenses like they're not qualified to be a preceptor, and he still does the ordination for the bhikkhu, then that ordination is considered invalid or what?
พระวิชัยยะจะต้องเป็นภิกษุอันนี้แน่นอนคำว่าภิกขา number one ก็คือ
If he is a bhikkhu and not committed parajika, then I think even though he may have committed some sangha disesa level of offences, it doesn't disqualify him.
แล้วก็องค์ของการบวชก็จะต้องมีว่า
This is to do with the number of monks that are needed to constitute a sangha for the purpose of ordination. Must be at least 5. Yang noi ha ong
samaka.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. ขอบคุณมากคุณจน
The nation, many, many more details, not just the preceptor and the five, but the place, the grounds, the language, so many, many factors, markers. Yeah. Someone at the earlier discussion suggested to me that it would be easier if Ajahn was a bhikkhu and could help more people.And I said, I don't think so at all. We can see very, very difficult to be a bhikkhu today and very difficult to help as a bhikkhu.
I just talked with a Vietnam friend about the topic of the Dhamma. I asked the question, what's the meaning of the refuge in the Dhammang Saranang Kashami? What it is Dhamma? That's Saranang.Kashami. But really, I didn't. I cannot explain in English very well. But I try to address the topic because Ajahn said in the Colombo about what the refuge Dhammang Saranang Kashami. Maybe someone explains about that. What is a Dhamma?The question is, Ajahn says about the Dhamma, only the Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma.
No understanding of Dhamma now, no understanding of reality now. Is there any refuge? So I think that the refuge has to come back to this moment, and it has to come back to...understanding what Dhamma is now. Otherwise, just by reading the book or talking about the Tipitaka, no refuge at all, if no understanding of what Dhamma is at this moment. Like if there's a moment of understanding of seeing or understanding a visible object now as anatta at that moment,It is a kind of refuge in the teachings, and that's why the one who has developed understanding to the level of Sotapanna, no moving away from taking refuge in the Dhamma, complete refuge in the Triple Gem.
And I think it's the Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, because they're the only Dhammas that lead out of samsara. Other Dhammas help to continueExistence in samsara. So it's the ones that lead out the refuge.
If someone doesn't have the understanding of the Dhamma arising now, but that person can see the values of kusala, and he thinks that the Buddha teach the right way, but he's still not able to understand the higher teaching,Very have very strong faith in what is kusala and what is akusala. Can that person be said to take their refuge in the Buddha or the Dhamma?
There's no understanding. It's like people who have never heard the Buddha's teachings. They may have a lot of confidence that it's good to give or have kindness or jhana, but.Cannot be said to take refuge in the Triple Gem because they don't understand what Buddha is or Buddha qualities are at all, and they don't understand what Dharma is, and they don't understand what Sangha is.
So that's why in the suttas we find that people say that they go for refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, in the Sangha at the end of the sermon, right? After the Buddha teach them about what is real and what is the path.
Usually it means that they have become Sotapanna, they have eradicated all wrong view, and doubt has been eradicated. There's understanding of what is meant by Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. No falling back at all.
I think people who go for refuge do so according to their level of understanding.
Now it's just the very beginning of understanding what refuge is, but it's not the highly developed understanding that really knows what refuge is, like those people who heard the teachings and became enlightened, really take refuge, really understand what the meaning of Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. Beginning to consider and beginning to understand what is meant.
Any explanation about refuge in terms of realities?
Good friends, Kalyanamitta, and words of the truth. Because you see that anyone who has right understanding, if he didn't say anything at all, can it benefit the other? So refuge is that the person who has right understanding can help the other. And usually when we talk about refuge, who else can be our refuge without Buddha, Dharma and Sangha?
No.
Mm-hmm. But not just pay respect or looking at him without hearing any word, no understanding.
And for the person declaring refuge, would Satta be a prominent factor?
I think that before anyone understand whatever Buddha taught, everyone speaks without understanding. Like someone might recite, I have refuge Buddha Dhamma Sangha Dhamma Sarang Kacchami. No understanding at all of what he's saying. Right?
I think Tai's question was, if I'm not mistaken, for the person taking refuge, suppose they have some level of understanding and it's kusala citta. Apart from the understanding, what other factors, what other citta seekers would be prominent?
For example?
That's the question. Let's say a person has some understanding and with kusala citta he takes refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Example of some understanding. What do you mean by some?
Oh, I see. That it does explain the reality of the present moment.
Just hearing the word Dharma, can that be the refuge without any understanding?
No.
So what is some understanding of Dharma? As the teachings of the Buddha, is that enough? Because in Thailand we use the word Dharma for the words of the Buddha. So when someone hears that Dhamma is the words of the Buddha and has confidence, as you say, just a little confidence, and say, I have Buddha as refuge, is that enough?
It may or may not be kusala. I don't think we are saying one should take refuge or something like that, but it's just a question of those who do take refuge with kusala citta, according to their level of understanding, they do so with that understanding. And
many people today, they are all having Buddha as their refuge, but what about their understanding? Against the teaching, sometimes, no pariyati.
If there's no...
say, whatever they say, one cannot really say there's any taking refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, because nothing is known or understood about it.
Just go straight to practice meditation center. See, is that not against the teachings of the Buddha?
To my understanding, Thay, the person would appreciate the value of the Dhamma, and there would be the notion that the Dhamma is what is to be followed forever in the future, not any other teaching. Yeah.
Those who go to the meditation center would say they appreciate the teachings.
Confidence, a lot of sadha.
Yeah. But we know that they're mistaken.
They might, well, depending on the meditation center, they might even say they have, you know, they've taken refuge in the Dhamma. But in my experience, not much Dhamma is taught at a meditation center.
So that's why people can say that they have Buddha as refuge, but actually that person doesn't have any idea about the Buddha's wisdom at all.
I think Nina was a good topic about mana as a hindrance or obstructing the hearing of Dhamma. Anything else you'd like to say about it?
I have to think.
Yeah, so the point was, because one or two people came in late, that if one has an idea, if there is mana, then one's not able to hear what someone may say or someone may share, because one might think, oh, I know this and they don't know this, or this person isn't a jhana, and so one switches off and doesn't listen, and one may miss hearing reminders from Kalyanamita. And so, but I think mana anytime can make life so difficult and be a real obstacle to developing understanding.
Conditions also dosa. So it's also unpleasant for the person who has mana. Very unpleasant moments, difficult life then.
So moments of mana itself, it's pleasant, it arises with attachment, but it can condition dosa immediately afterwards, very quickly. Different cheetahs. How soft the word is, they can hear very, no problem.
Natural.
That sound was
everything, every conditioned reality.
Mana is
certainly.
Yeah,
everything.
That's an absolutely before lunch question. It's about lunch. It's the sound, you know, first the hearing only hears sound, then there's the forming up of the sounds into the ideas of words. And somebody made a comment, well, when the word lunch is heard, it doesn't have to be loud, everybody hears it. Is that Aramana Upanisaya Pachaya?
Can it lead to understanding whatever appears?
Lunch can't, but understanding how quickly one the attachment is to sounds.
How quickly it's forgotten.
Yes, but then there's lots of attachment about lunch. About the words.
So, instead of this moment, whether it is the Aramana Upanisaya Pachaya Or is it Dhamma?
Or is it
Dhamma? Adhamma?
So I have questions about concept, because I usually think there must be some value about concept. This is something like what we can communicate, like when everybody, if everybody understand English, you have the same idea about lunch. But what about maybe others when they don't know English and they don't know what we meant about lunch? And similar to other things, many things in concept, but it has some effect to our life.
So for us, because everyone here speaks English, so when there's a hearing of the sounds of lunch, that we call lunch, immediately there's thinking about lunch, and it's not just thinking about the word, there's thinking about different dishes and tastes and many different things and many, many moments of attachment. But if someone is here who doesn't understand English and they hear that sound or word, then no condition for thinking in that way or attachment in that way, because it's meaningless. It doesn't condition any thinking about ideas with regard to lunch.
But I mean, there must be something behind the concept, because if we don't know English, we don't know what does it mean. So,
Sanya at that moment of hearing the sound, and the sanya that arises when there is the impression of the sound, and sanya arises of each moment of thinking about visible object of lunch, thinking about all kinds of memories of lunch, all sorts of impressions and past visible objects. So it's sanya which conditions the thinking. But if sound isn't understood, if lunch isn't understood, then the sanya just marks other objects and doesn't condition thinking about what we call lunch.
So it means yes, I usually under without reality is no concept, but in this case, like sanya, everybody had the same sanya about lunch.
There's no joint sanya, but when the sounds are heard, there are just conditions for sanya, because everyone has been taught when they are small that this is what lunch means. So conditions, many conditions for many, many sanyas to condition thinking about it. But maybe one person's not listening, so no conditions to think that way.
Or even like durian. Everyone who speaks English understands the word durian, but it can condition different cheetahs in different people.
I don't mean that way. But the thing is, it's like when you speak like lunch, maybe as you said, that the sound, that conditions for everybody understand that it means lunch. But what I mean here is like, why maybe that sound has some characteristics that all the sanya had like the same thinking about that sound.
So each sound that arises and falls away now is different. So sound is just sound, just that which is heard. But the sounds that arise are conditioned by the Mahabhuta rupas and other rupas. So each sound is different. So when hearing lunch, the sounds heard are different from when one hears breakfast. Different sounds heard. So that's why sanya is marking at each moment, conditioning different thinking, because sounds are different, even though it's just sound. Now, the visible objects seen are different. If visible objects were all the same, the
marking wouldn't lead to different kinds of thinking about different people and different colors, but it's because each visible object is different that there is, it leads to thinking in different ways.
So it all depends on the accumulated sanya and other accumulations of the individual, really, not so much on the sound. Not on the sound at all, in fact.
Does a snake have concept when it does not hear?
Does a snake
have concept when it doesn't hear?
No.
No, its mate and children.
It may not have the like a concept like we understand the same way, but it has some idea about something.
We have to understand what's meant by concept. Even right now, no one says anything. Is there any concept?
Yes.
So a snake, it doesn't hear anything, but it still has concept. Every moment of experiencing anything, after the process of seeing, then there's concept from nimitta, sign of the arising and falling away of a certain object. Can a fly has concept?
Yes.
Without hearing?
Maybe from seeing.
From experiencing.
From experiencing, yes. So what about like when Ajahn explains something about Dhamma, but also that concept helps to understand more about Dhamma?
That's why we have to understand concept clearly. What is it?
Is the object of thinking?
Of what?
Of what is experienced?
In terms of?
In terms of what you mean like?
Not a reality right then.
Not reality is the image.
For example, right now, there is the visible object, right? Mm-hmm. But there's the idea of someone, a moment of seeing.
Yes.
Not the visible object at all. Only right. The idea of that, which is the sign of that which is seen, and also the sign of the arising and falling away of seeing.
You mean nimitta?
Nimitta. Mm-hmm. Without nimitta, can there be concept?
No.
Or Paramada Dhamma, can there be nimitta?
No.
Mm-hmm. So, reality and nimitta and concept.
Without food, are there any lunch?
Without any lunch, no eating.
No lunch.
So can we say like a concept conveys some meaning from reality?
Concept convey meaning? You mean it has meaning built into it?
It's like... It can help to understand Dhamma or help to understand some in communications.
Well, yes, when we communicate, we use concepts to communicate. But the question of understanding the meaning of what is communicated is a matter of the accumulated understanding of the listener. The concepts themselves can't communicate anything.
Right. I also think that it helps you consider concept under the six kinds of concept that are explained in the Paramattha Dhamma books. It's very helpful.
Found only one kind, two kinds. The first kind.
Is that the first kind mentioned about the concept that describe realities?
Without words, out with words. When you talk about describing.
Even without words?
An idea to which you haven't put words, but not the direct understanding of that reality.
When there's reflecting on what one has heard and understood, which as we know is a condition for pariyatti, understanding. The reflecting is in terms of concepts, but it points to dhammas. Again, it's the mental process of the person, of the individual, rather than the concepts themselves that are significant.
Can we say that it's the object of thinking?
Even now, when they're not moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, or moments like the first moment in the mind or process which may experience that object, but at every other moment of thinking, it is concept. So even no thought of the word flower, but there's just an impression of shape at that moment. It is concept that's the object. So that's why for the fly or the snake, just like now, after seeing, there's just an impression of shape and concept is the object immediately.
So I think in the afternoon it's good to talk more also about concepts of realities, because I often hear pariyatti is not the direct understanding of realities, but still concept, thinking of concept, but concept of a reality. That is a difference, so it's good to hear more about it. And this afternoon I like to say more about mana too, and the suppression of mana.
Any more about waterfalls or other things now? Yeah. And also when we talk about, we hear word lunch and the sanya conditions, thinking. So the sanya that is accumulated and immediately conditions thinking with lobha, for example, the main condition for that accumulated sanya is decisive support condition, different accumulations, like for the arahat, no more conditions to think with attachment when they hear that word, if they're here. So the main condition is actually the accumulated tendency to think in a particular way, or for sanya to mark particular objects on account of that sound, those sounds. And that's why it's not joint thinking or joint sanya, because it depends on the tendencies and the accumulations.
Kunsara, could I back to Ajahn Ajara again? Because when I call Than Ajahn, she's my Kalayamita. She doesn't know that I don't know the great teacher, and the great Kalayamita is the Buddha. So, but Than Ajahn bring down each word of the Buddha to express the truth for us, you see. So that I call Than Ajahn, but I know the great teacher is the Buddha, the one who enlightened one.
We appreciate that, like when you say Than Ajahn, it is just showing your respect and appreciation for the sharing of the teachings.
Yeah,
but I think the point that she was mentioning was that actually it's Kalyanamita, because yeah, one great teacher, but it, like she says, in Thailand, the terms Acharya or Ajahn and it's very common.
Yes.
So people would like to use these, but in other countries like
Canada, it's not a common way to speak, or so sometimes, like if I'm talking to my friends, I will just refer to my very good friend that helps me understand the teaching, because if one says, oh, the great teacher or something, then it sounds like a guru, or it puts people off hearing. So it's a cultural aspect, yeah. But we all appreciate that it is the very special Kalyanamrita that shares, no matter whether one says Tanajan or Ajahn or Kun or just Suchin, it doesn't matter. It's the appreciation that's important.
Okay, I catch your meaning now. I was just going to say, calling people in Thailand Ajahn is so common. When I've been a teacher, my students used to call me Ajahn Ann 45 years ago, and they still call me Ajahn Ann. So,
like Uncle Imala, he had a jealous teacher. Uncle Imala.
Yeah.
What did he have?
He told him that he must have, yeah, bad, jealous.
Oh, I see.
That's why he
told
him
to
kill.
It's not Kalyanamrita. Kalyanamrita can be teacher, or teacher can be or cannot be.
She doesn't mind how people address. What's important is the understanding of the teachings. Yeah.
And the culture also in Thailand is so different, because when I see people paying respect to her feet, it all comes so natural. It's not strange at all. Very natural, I think.
But if it was in the West, it would be very, very strange. Or if I showed a photo of that, people would be totally put off, or it's not appreciated at all.
Exactly, exactly. There are some situations in Christianity where there's still washing of feet, but it's rare, and yeah.
Is that because of mana?
No.
No? Just cultural thing?
There can be a lot of mana that you don't accept other people's culture, or don't not are willing to understand the feelings.
Yeah.
Think I do the better. Why do they do that?
Yeah. I won't fit into the culture or something like this.
So it can also refer to the concept also, like an idea about the teacher and paying respect, and also for those like Western, they do not have such accumulation for that, the concept of pay respect to the teacher.
I think that's true. It's in a different way we pay the respect.
It's huge.
It's a different way to pay respect.
The other. Because we can really rejoice in the sincerity of people when I see Thais paying respect to you by the feet, and I can really rejoice in that. So sincere.
I think that in the West people can show a lot of respect for the teachers, but it wouldn't be in this way. It would be quite inappropriate in this way. It would be, so it's just different customs, different habits, like we wouldn't say great teacher or something, no matter what one's feeling is. So it's just different customs or cultures.
Yeah. So when I'm at the Muniti and many people come in and pay respect and give gifts, I think it's really very nice to see that.
But I remember when someone gave you some donation or something and you found it difficult or awkward because not used to something like this, and I said you can just give to the foundation or yeah. So it's just different customs and different ways.
Anjati, any kind of thought of thinking is Panjati. The object of thinking is Panjati. No matter, it's just thinking about this with our words. The idea of something there from Nimitta.
Well, the case of like money, for example, you know, $100 is more than $1,000, is less than $1,000. There must be the like, concept about the value of the money. There must be something there too.
Knowing even a dollar is concept. Anything which is known as something. For example, it's only a visible object, but it is known as flower. If there is no impression, no sign, no image, there is no idea of what it is. That's why even at moment of have such idea, the citta experiences with sanya, memory.
Is there some idea, like when you talk about knowing the value of money, is there some idea that thinking of concepts, there shouldn't be thinking of concepts like that? Or, no, no.
I mean, like something, like some meaning is conveyed from that, like $1 note is different from the $100, and everybody understand that.
And when looking at the notes, different visible objects seen, and one hearing the sounds, different sounds heard, different kinds of thinking, because we've all learned in school the difference between 100 and 1,000, or 1 and 100.
What is this?
Something to hold the microphone.
Concept? From nimitta.
Yes, maybe.
From reality.
From what is seen.
Yeah. So there must be reality, but since each one arises and falls away in split seconds, so what is left is the shape and form as nimitta of something, as something that is panya. It's known as something. It's panjati. Because when they asked you what is this, you didn't say visible object. You didn't say nimitta. But you take it for something. So again, what is this?
In concept is microphone. Reality is a visible object.
No idea about visible object at all. So visible object is not concept. But embodiment of thinking about this is concept.
Moment of seeing visible object immediately. Long story about microphone. And
you can ask Thai anytime. What is that? Whether he said about reality or nimitta or concept. Usually concept. Another concept.